بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله. We are now in the third session of Khums, which is one of the important rituals in Islam. And this Khums ritual is closely tied with the 12th Imam. For reasons we've discussed partially in previous sessions, and this is a theme which will keep on recurring. So as we discuss different aspects of the Khums, one should begin to understand the relationship this has with the 12th Imam, the successor of the Holy Messenger at our time. Now, the Khums is levied on what we call the annual gain. The annual gain is defined by three elements. In Arabic, it's malun muktasabatun, no, excuse me, malun mamlukatun fa'idatun. It has to be, in order to qualify as an annual gain, it has to be malun, a belonging, which we discussed in the previous session. It has to be of value for the Sharia-abiding individual. Mamluketon, it has to be their own belonging. Because we said sometimes there are things in your hand which under your exploitation, but they are not yours. So two elements of out of the three we discussed. The third element is a very important element which needs to be opened up. And it's this third element wherein there lies differing interpretations by the jurists and the scholars. But before I discuss this third element, just to, as a kind of revision in relation to the first element, because the second element, mamlukaton, is very straightforward. It has to be canonically yours. That thing which wants to be levied has to be yours. But malun, we said the best translation is belonging. Now, whatever is your belonging has to be, the khums is levied upon it. Now, this is very, when we said the definition for belonging, if you recall, we said it has to be of value because you have a longing for it. And that value has to be on a par with the Sharia, i.e. it can't be a sin. So the khums is levied on your own belongings. Now before we get to the third element, just by way of example, I want to illustrate one of the features of being a belonging and how it affects the equation when it comes to khums. Imagine you're a farmer and your wheat harvest is, for example, this summer, and then to some degree this summer, and then the harvest will be complete the following year. So let's say the wheat plant has grown this year, but the full harvest is the succeeding year. Now, we haven't discussed what does it mean? What does the term the khums year, what does it actually entail? This we will come in time. Because the khums that is levied on your own belongings is the belongings that you gain in a given year. That year has a particular beginning and the Sharia has delineated it. But we'll come to that another time. Right now, I want to focus on the term malun, belonging. So you're a farmer, you've started the process, but the wheat harvest will result in its fruition in the following khums year. In this khums year, the stage reached is the wheat plant. And there's the stalk of the wheat, there may be the leaves of the wheat, but it is yet to spike. It is yet to cluster. So it hasn't reached its fruition stage. That will happen in the succeeding year. But when one wants to calculate one's homes, one has to ask oneself, the farmer has to ask oneself, is this wheat plant minus spike stage? Is the wheat plant itself of value? And if the answer is yes, even though the harvest is yet to be completed and will be completed in the succeeding year, is it of value this year? And if it does have value, it qualifies as a belonging. And therefore, the chums will be levied on that value. And then in the succeeding year, when the spiking is completed, here you don't calculate that amount that you paid its that amount upon which you paid its homes the previous year, because you've already paid for that. You would have to pay the final stage, the spiking stage of the wheat minus the wheat plant value stage that you paid the homes for the previous year. So this is just to understand that if it qualifies as a belonging, the chums is levied. Then there's the issue of it has to be your own. And finally, the third element, there's a difference of opinion. And this we want to, inshallah, open up to some degree in this session. The third element, according to some scholars, such as Ayatollah Khamenei, the third element is that it has to be earned. That belonging upon which the khums is levied has to be earned by you. And that's why they say the three elements are malun, belonging, mamlukatun, your own, muktasabatun. It has to be earned. That's a minority position. The majority of the jurists have said that the third element is that of fa'idatun. It has to be a gain in the absolute sense, be it through earning or not. If it qualifies as a gain, that will suffice. And so, your own belongings that you've earned, like money in a monthly salary, if it's earned, the khums will be levied. If it's not earned, it's gained, but it's not earned. According to the jurists like Ayatollah Khomeini, there will be no khums levied. An example is presents or prizes you receive. They are not earned. They are given to you. You didn't earn them. You may have merited them, but you didn't work for them. And therefore, with presents, there will be no khums levied upon them, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But with Ayatollah Sistani, he and the majority of the jurists, they say the third element is a gain in the absolute sense, whether it be through earning or not. With this criterion, prizes and presents and other things will have the khums levied upon them. Whereas with Ayatollah Khomeini, it won't, because the belonging wasn't earned. With Ayatollah Sistani, prizes and presents will be levied with the khums, because it qualifies as you gaining them. Sometimes gaining is through earning, sometimes gaining is not through earning, such as receiving a birthday present. Although there are other discussions which we won't enter now, and by levying the khums, by having the khums levied on presents, usually a 1 year period is afforded. If you use up the present, or use the present in general, during that 1 year, the khums year, there will be no khums levied on the present. It's only when you don't use the present and you don't need the present and during that 1 year, once the year comes to an end and you haven't used it and or you didn't need it, only then the khums will be will have to be paid. Okay, there's a difference between the khums being levied on something and the Khums having to be paid for something. The issue of payment, that happens after you're afforded that 1 year. You're given a 1 year respite period. But the levying of the Khums happens from day one when you receive something, either through earning or through a present. The Khums is levied on it, but you don't have to pay it there and then. Then you have a 1 year period afforded. It's given to you. And the reasoning, inshallah, will cover one day. And then after that 1 year, if you still haven't used that present, then its Khums will be applied. So there's a difference between the Khums being levied and the payment of the Khums. Okay. So here we see, if I was to ask you, given the, after describing these two criteria in relation to the third element of the definition of annual gains, that annual gains upon which the Khums is levied, if I was to ask you that of the two criteria, which one will have more Khums levied upon it? And the answer will be, those who, and it's a majority position, those who are of the opinion that the Khums will be levied on belongings that qualify as a gain, be that gain through earning or not, in a given year. Okay, so with that introduction, let's go to page 7. So concerning belongings that are canonically yours, malun mamlukatun. Some qualify as earning, the Arabic being takassub, i.e. earning. What we mean by earning is earning through one's labouring or through one's mind, such as working as a sanitation or software engineer. The software engineer uses one's mind as a way of earning money. The sanitation engineer uses one's biceps more. Whilst others, such as Ayatollah Sistani, and this is the majority position, do not qualify. Whilst others do not qualify as earning, such as presents. So, yes, this. So some belongings that are canonically yours, they qualify as earning. That's a minority position. But some belongings that are yours do not qualify as earning. They don't qualify as takassub. There's no earning here, such as presents. So we have two groups here. These two groups I've kind of listed in two with two appendices. In Appendix A, labeled earning property or earning belongings, belongings that have been earned by property. If you remember, we're using property and belongings interchangeably, although the accurate translation for malun, for mal, is belonging. Okay, now earning belongings, examples in Appendix A, any form of job that you may have, such as in industry, agricultural, livestock farming, business, trading, production, sales, being a teacher, being a mechanic. All these are different examples of where you are earning your belongings. One example I've used here, and they've listed in the books on jurisprudence, is that is possessions without others' consent, hiyaza, the Arabic. And that's an example of that would be in the previous, in the olden times, it was more common where there was a big plot of land. They would say, go and everyone go on, you know, kind of delineate your plot of land. And they would go and everyone would kind of locate an area where they would now start settling. So that entails some degree of work. But a more modern example is, for example, someone going out on the streets or visiting garbage containers looking for plastics, plastic containers or other forms of plastics, and collecting them to recycle, and they will earn something out of it. It's no plastics which are found in the garbage can or in the garbage container, or for example, on the streets, it doesn't have an owner anymore. Okay, so you don't need anyone's consent, but it once you do collect them, it becomes your possession. And then you may sell them by the kilogram and so on and so forth. And that's a form of earning, for example. Now, these lists are by no means exhaustive, but these are just examples. So with Appendix A, the belongings you gain through these kind of jobs, since you're earning them, according to Ayatollah Khomeini, the khums will be levied upon them. And then after a year, you would have to pay the khums. Although you can, if you want, pay it during the year too. But you have been granted a respite period of 1 year. Now, we haven't described how and when that 1 year develops. That we have to describe another day, inshallah, another session. Right now, it's the subject matter upon which the khums is levied which concerns me. I want to open this, dissect this, a subject matter, which is malun, mamlukatun, and according to Ayatollah Khomeini, muktasabatun, according to Ayatollah Sistani, fa'idatun, again in the absolute sense. So, now, if you look in Appendix B, look at the examples here, these belongings have not been earned. You didn't work for them through your biceps or your mind. So one is presence, although presence in Arabic, it's been given different titles depending on one's intention. These lists I'm providing, one day we have to go through them one by one, especially Appendix B, and speak about them. So I will elaborate over time, inshallah. But depending on your incentive and your motive behind giving a present, in Arabic, different names are given, such as hibaton, hadiyaton. So presents, prizes, you don't earn them. You didn't work for them. And you were given a prize, for example. So these things, they qualify as a gain in the absolute sense. And therefore the khums is levied upon them. But according to Ayatollah Khomeini, since the criterion is earning, presents and prizes will not be levied with the khums. Or inheritance gained unexpectedly. That we have to, inshallah, discuss what this means. And then the khums will not be, the khums will be levied upon it. And why? And what's the difference between inheritance gained unexpectedly and inheritance gained expectedly? But inheritance which is gained unexpectedly will have the khums, according to Ayatollah Sistani, because it applies as a gain. You haven't earned it, but it's a gain. With Ayatollah Khomeini, it won't have the khums levied upon it, because it doesn't qualify as a gain. But then we have the normal inheritance, which is expected. Both of them say that there will be khums. There will not be any khums levied on inheritance, the inheritance which is expected. Now, the reasoning for that we'll discuss in this session, inshallah. Or recommended applications of charity. Let's say if you were to receive some charity, that's also a gain. That's also a gain, and therefore it goes into your annual gains and will have the khums levied upon it. Why? Because it qualifies as a gain. According to Ayatollah Khomeini, it wouldn't qualify as earning, and therefore recommended applications of charity does not have the khums levied upon it. Okay. So some jurists like Ayatollah Khomeini view belongings deemed as takassub, as earning, as being khums leviable, page 8, and those not deemed as takassub as non-khums leviable, such as presents and prizes. However, the majority of jurists, including Ayatollah Sistani, view all such belongings, examples being in appendices A and B, as khums leviable. you have to forgive me. On page 7 and 8, there's been a spelling error in Arabic. The word hibaton, there's a typo mistake there. It shouldn't be spelt like that. Inshallah, I'll correct that for the next session. So according to jurists, and the majority of jurists, like Ayatollah Sistani, all the belongings in appendices A and B, since they all qualify as a gain, be it through your earning or not, they will be khums leviable, because their criterion for khums leviability is not that of earning or takassub, but rather it's that of fa'ida, it's that of gain in the absolute sense. Okay, now the next issue that arises is, one may ask, why do we have this difference of opinion in relation to the third element of the definition of annual gains upon which the khums is levied? Why do we have this difference of opinion? Why do some say muktasabatun, only through earning, but some say gaining in the absolute sense? Such a difference, the bottom of page 8, of opinion arises as a result of the religious authorities' ijtihadi analysis pertaining to different ahadith. Namely, the sound report of Ali ibn Mahziyar, who relates from Muhammad ibn al-Hasan al-Ash'ari, who said. So it's this next hadith which I want to read. This hadith, all the maraji, the religious authorities, have seen this hadith. But when they've come to analyze it, a difference of opinion has arisen. It's the same hadith, but some, a minority, have understood one thing, the majority have understood another. Both are respectable, because both have gone through the proper reasoning procedures and protocol. And then one part of that legal theory in the analyzing of this hadith entails understanding the Arabic. And then if one marja, one religious authority, understands the Arabic in X way, and another religious authority in another way, Y, X and Y are different. But they both went through the correct protocol, but at this step of the protocol, for example, they both established that the report is a sound report, it's authentic, and other protocols. They've gone through and everything has met their criteria, and for now everyone is on with the same in line with one another. But when it comes then to the understanding of one word, then it may lead to difference of interpretations, because how they have understood this one Arabic word in the hadith. And this shows how Arabic grammar and Arabic lexicography, how important it is, what the meaning of the words are. And in the first 3 or 4 years in the seminaries, the seminary students, all they study is Arabic grammar, Arabic morphology, and Arabic syntax, and Arabic rhetoric. And what we're going to, the difference of opinion that arises here is traced back to Arabic morphology. I'll explain that how. So the hadith reads that Al-Ash'ari says that some of our companions wrote to Abi Ja'far II, referring to the 9th successor to the Holy Messenger, Imam Jawad, alayhi salam, peace be upon him. They wrote to the Imam, writing, they said, inform me concerning the khums. Is it applied over everything that man benefits from, be it little or abundant, from all sorts of things and over farmland? Is it levied on all things? That was the question written. The Imam replied, the khums applies after the ma'une. A new term has been mentioned here, ma'une. For now, we have to discuss what the ma'une is. Loosely, we will translate it as the expenditure of one's expended, of one's expenses, the spending of one's expenses. That is the ma'une. The Imam says, what you've said, is it applied over everything that man benefits from? The Arabic is very important here. I'll come to that in a minute. He says, yes, the khums is levied and has to be paid for. But after you deduct the ma'une, so the annual gains that you have, it refers and pertains to all that man benefits from. But you can deduct your expenses, your ma'une, from it before paying the khums. So your annual expenses in a given year, you can deduct from your annual gains that we've given the definition of before. And then whatever the result is, you divide by 5, and that's how you calculate the khums. Annual gains minus your ma'une for that year divided by 5. So the ma'une will come into, we'll speak more about in more detail later in another session, maybe the next or the following one. But here the Imam says, because the question was, is it the khums applied? Is it applied over everything that man benefits from? The Arabic is A'ala jami'a ma yastafiduhu ar-rajul. This yastafiduhu, this is where this word, this term, expression, is where the controversy lies. Well, it's not really a controversy, just two different interpretations. And here, ma yastafiduhu, that which man benefits from, what does it mean? So the Arabic ma yastafiduhu, which I've loosely translated as that which man benefits from. What's the nature of this benefit? Now, yastafiduhu belongs to a morphological verb paradigm called istif'al. It emanates from this verb paradigm. Now, I won't go into the morphology because I know it won't interest most of you. But in this verb paradigm, there are more than 20 meanings. When the scholar looks at such a hadith, he has those meanings in mind. Well, he has to. And then he looks at the different meanings that the verb paradigm has, let alone the root word. And after looking through those meanings pertaining to the verb paradigm, he has to say, which meaning applies in relation to this verse, or in relation to this report rather. Here, after looking through the different meanings, two different meanings have been alluded to by the scholars. Two different meanings of this verb paradigm. One meaning of this verb paradigm, istif'al, is that of seeking. In Arabic, talab. Okay, you're seeking something. The second interpretation through the other meaning of this verb paradigm is that of actualizing. Seeking, actualizing. Now, so let's call seeking interpretation A and actualizing interpretation B. Now, both A meaning and B, the seeking and the actualizing, are 2 out of 20 meanings in this verb paradigm. Now, based on A, seeking, that the operative clause that we said will have this meaning, that benefit which man seeks for. So, is the khums applied over everything of benefits that man seeks for? And thus, this would be on a par with the notion of earning and takasub, because you're seeking to gain. Is a seeking entailed? But the interpretation based on the second meaning, which was actualization, the translation of that operative clause would be that benefit that actualizes for man. And this, therefore, would be on a par with the Oitolosistoni's position and the majority of the religious authorities' positions. Because that benefit which actualizes for you, that which you gain in the absolute sense, what actualizes for you, it may be through earning and a monthly salary, it may be through non-earning, such as a present being given to you, and that actualizes for you. So the Khums applies in relation to that which you seek for earning, that which actualizes for you, which means gains in the absolute sense, be it through earning or non-earning. And this is why we have a difference of interpretation and a difference of the nature of the subject matter upon which the khums is levied, because according to some, your own belongings that are acquired through earning is the subject matter of khums. What we call annual gains means belongings through earning. That was Ayatollah Khomeini's position. According to others, like Ayatollah Sistani, the annual gains is defined as your own belongings that you've gained, which has become actualized for you, be they through earning or not. So the boundaries of the subject matter upon which the khums is levied would be wider with the second criterion of gaining in the absolute sense, whereas with when it's gaining through earning only, the boundaries would be less wide. It will be more narrow. Okay. And finally, a new list. I want to introduce a new list under what we're calling Appendix C on page 10. There's a third category of belongings. And this third category, according to all religious authorities, does not have the khums levied upon it, such as inheritance, blood money, and other examples that, if we go through Appendix C, inheritance, dowry, a particular form of divorce called khula, blood money, or capital received as khums or zakat, and which accidentally remained or happened to remain after a period of 1 year, some of that received khums or zakat that was given to someone, it happened to remain after 1 year. Now, these five which I've listed in Appendix C, we have to go through all of them separately, discussing different branches. Right now, though, I want to explain why these examples, I'll give one of the examples, I'll go into some degree of detail right now, but all of them we'll discuss in much more depth, especially inheritance, because it affects us all. So we will, here I just want to explain why these don't have the khums levied upon it. Irrespective of whether your position is that of Ayatollah Khomeini or Ayatollah Sistani, it doesn't matter. According to both, and according to all religious authorities, these examples in Appendix C will not have the khums levied upon it. Now, those who follow Ayatollah Khomeini, when they go through this list, they will say, well, yes, none of these are manners of earning. You don't earn inheritance or the dowry or blood money. You're not earning anything. It doesn't qualify as earning. And therefore, according to Ayatollah Khomeini, it won't have the khums levied upon them. But if you follow Ayatollah Sistani, who said the criterion is fa'idatun, a gain in the absolute sense, be it through earning or not, well, with inheritance, isn't it a gain? With the dowry, aren't they gaining something? Isn't something actualized for them? The blood money, isn't it a gain? And here we have to see what the answer to such a question is. I'll answer that in a minute. Okay, so page 10, however, there's a third category of belongings, Appendix C, that do not have the khums levied upon it, according to all religious authorities. These belongings do not qualify as takasub according to the likes of Ayatollah Khomeini, hence the reason why they are not khums leviable. But according to others, they do qualify as belongings. Inheritance, it's a belonging, okay? It's a belonging which is a gain in the absolute sense. But they are exceptions to the rule. Or they don't qualify even as a fa'idah, a gain. So the reasoning with Ayatollah Khomeini we've discussed, but for others, some say that these five have been mentioned in the ahadith, they're an exception to the rule. That's also another way of reasoning. So one form of reasoning was saying these five are not levied, the khums are not levied upon them because they don't qualify as earning. That's a minority position. You can use another form of demonstration and argumentation by saying the hadith says so, and the hadith is authentic, and then we say the khums is not levied on them. That's another way of argument. Or if you follow Ayatollah Sistani, in addition to this the hadith which mentioned these four or five things as not being khums leviable, your criterion with Ayatollah Sistani was that the belongings which qualify as a gain in the absolute sense. Now, look at these five. Here, one can argue, those who have this majority position, where the third element is gaining in the absolute sense, they may say that these five do not qualify as a gain. Now, I'll just give you one example with the blood money, because it's a very straightforward one. And then when we discuss each of these titles of Appendix C in detail, then we'll go through all of them and why they don't qualify as a gain. With blood money is, for example, it's like a fine assigned by the Sharia when someone, by way of example, injures you. Someone, for example, in a crash, they drove carelessly, it ended up you losing your arm, they would have to pay the blood money for that lost arm in compensation for the damage, the injury that they have caused. Now here, with blood money, when they give you that money as a way of compensation, have you gained anything? Does the term gain qualify here? And the answer is no, you've lost your arm. That was just a form of compensation to, for example, to go back to square one again. The damaged arm has to be recompensated. And that compensation is usually through money, and it's given to you, but it still doesn't qualify as a gain. And therefore, if it doesn't qualify as a gain, such as the blood money, because it's not really a gain, you've lost your arm. You were never ready to lose your arm for a sum of money. That was just a way of compensation. You haven't gained anything extra. And therefore, blood money does not have the khums levied upon it. So these, with all these examples, if it doesn't qualify as a gain, it won't have the khums levied upon it, especially if your criterion in relation to the third element of the annual gains is that of belongings which qualify as a gain in the absolute sense. If something doesn't, that also would not be deemed as the subject matter for khums. Okay, so in summary, therefore, and we'll end with the summary here. When calculating your khums, there are two terms that you have to calculate. One is your annual gains. Then you deduct from your annual gains in a given year, you deduct your ma'une, which are your expenses. Now there are different forms of expenses. We'll discuss that at the right time. And then whatever results, you divide by five. So far, we've dissected the term annual gains, and it comprised of three elements. two elements was your own belongings. In relation to the third element, there was a difference of opinion. But now, with these three elements, you can now establish what your annual gains are. And then the deduction process, inshallah, we'll discuss when we speak about the ma'una. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.